Now as the nation marks Black History Month, our next guest says there are a lot of stories here in Wisconsin and around the Midwest that have been overlooked. Black people have been in Wisconsin since at least the 1700s when they accompanied fur traders as slaves. There were about 500 enslaved people in Wisconsin during the era, and there were also a few free men who made their living as fur traders. We're taking a look now at Black life and what it was like in Wisconsin in the 1700s and 1800s and beyond, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of African Americans in Wisconsin? Is this story the story of your own family? What do you want to know about the history of Black Wisconsinites going back to the early days before Wisconsin was even Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Christy Clark Pujara is an associate professor of Afro-American Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's the author of Dark Work, The Business of Slavery in Rhode Island. She's currently writing From Slavery to Suffrage, Black on the Wisconsin Frontier, 1740 to 1866. Christy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've said elsewhere that in order to fully understand the experience of Black Americans, we have to include places where they were, but they didn't have large communities, including small towns in the Midwest in the early 1800s, for example. Can you talk about the importance of finding those stories?
Finding these stories can be challenging in the archives because the archives tend to keep the records of the powerful. And I'm looking at a community that was socially, politically, and economically marginalized. But these stories need to be told. And this is something that I've noticed in our past election season. Often the word Midwestern would be used as a little bit of code, right? They would talk about the Midwestern vote. And that often was, you know, code for white, because most people don't think about the history of Black people in spaces like the Midwest. And that's something that bothered me personally. I'm a Midwesterner, born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. My mother's family had been there before it was ever even the state. I went to school in Minnesota. I went to grad school in Iowa, and I live here. Yet most people don't think about Black people being in the space that is the Midwest until the late 19th or even into the 20th century, not understanding that long generational history of Black people in these spaces.
Can you talk about some of the earlier stories that you've been able to find, given the difficulties finding things in the archives about the early days of Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So, you know, the first Black people that come into this region that we now call Wisconsin are coming with French fur traders. Some were free, others were enslaved. And then in the 1820s, you have even more enslaved people of African descent coming into the region with military officers and lead prospectors. So I often have to tell their stories backward. I have to look at the records of people like Henry Dodge, who was our first territorial governor. And it's often seen as a founding father of Wisconsin. But Henry Dodge did not come here alone. He came here with Jim, Joe, Toby, and Lear, right? So these five enslaved people that were instrumental in building his fortune. They were bringing up thousands of pounds of lead a day. And I'm interested in what was their life like? What was their experience of the frontier like? So trying to understand what frontier life meant for people who were such in such perilous situations. And some of them found their ways to free Black homesteads, most notably Pleasant Ridge, which was a homestead of free Black people founded in Wisconsin.
I think when people think of the story of slavery, we think more of the Deep South and the Tidewater region, Virginia, and the area. There is, as you were just saying, some history of slavery in Wisconsin. How, until the state outlawed it, how prevalent was it here?
Well, it's prevalent, but it was not large. And so what I mean by that is that the practice of race-based slavery was not just tolerated, but accepted. So somebody of the stature of, you know, Henry Dodge, he wasn't hiding the fact that he was keeping people in bondage, or someone like John Roundtree, who we now consider the founder of Platteville. Like, they weren't hiding the fact that they had people whose liberty was stolen every hour of every day, whose labor was exploited. we often don't think about the Midwest and slave labor because, like many, I think like most Americans, when I went to school, I was told that slavery was banned in the Northwest Territories. And so this was part of the Northwest Territories, you know, and then the states are carved out. But what historians have really been uncovering in really significant ways, I'd say in the last 15 years or so, that the ban on slavery in the Northwest Territory wasn't really worth the paper it was written on when you look at what was happening in practice. So there are, you know, a number of historians that are working in different parts of the Midwest and in different states. But what we are finding in common is that despite the ban, people were held in bondage. And enslavers like Henry Dodge do weird things. They emancipate people who weren't even supposed to be held in bondage, and they file the paperwork with the local clerk's office. And these are kind of confounding when you encounter this in the archive. Henry Dodge's papers, for instance, are held at UW-Platteville, right? And, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at a document that says, you know, I'm freeing Toby, Tom, Lear, Jim, and Joe. And I'm like, how are you freeing them when they weren't supposed to be held in bondage in the first place? Right? But it tells me how it was operating in practice. So there was the law, and then there was what was happening in practice and what people's neighbors tolerated and accepted.
We're talking to Christy Clark Pujara, Associate Professor of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison, looking at the often overlooked history of African-Americans in the early days of Wisconsin and beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about Black Wisconsinites from before we were a state through the 19th century and beyond? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison Professor Christy Clark Pujara, talking about Black history in Wisconsin from before we were a state and beyond. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Let's go to your calls now. Nick is with us in Lancaster. Nick, hi.
Hello. Hey, I live very near Pleasant Ridge, and I've always been captivated by the story of the sign, and I'd love to know more about it. So where would I look, or how can I find out more about it?
Oh, Nick, thanks for the call. Christy, could you tell us a little more about, you mentioned the Pleasant Ridge community.
Absolutely. So Pleasant Ridge, also known as B-Town, was populated by free Black migrants, fugitive slaves, and emancipated Wisconsinites. So people that had been held in bondage during the territorial period, and then they helped found this free Black settlement after statehood. And it's founded the same year the state is, in 1848. And it really serves as a refuge for Black people in rural Southwest Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Historical Society has many of the letters of the families who lived at Pleasant Ridge, right? And it also has some pictures of some of the first people that are there, and the schoolhouse that they built and the church that they built. So we can have access to these primary documents, and some of them have been digitized. So I would encourage the caller to go to the Wisconsin Historical Society and look up Pleasant Ridge, and seeing the faces of some of these people is really incredible. In particular, there is a photo of a woman whose name is America Jenkins, who was held in bondage by George W. Jones in Sisinawa for 7 years before she becomes a fixture at Pleasant Ridge as a free woman and a real pillar of her community.
Thanks a lot for that call, Nick, and that question. We'll go to Peter now in Spooner. Peter, hi.
Hi, yeah. Anthropology, PhD, and unfortunately, I don't know a whole lot of this space of the history in the Midwest. But I did have a question, because one of the things that I am familiar with is the shift in cultures in the upper Midwest as ethnic whites in Germany and Scandinavia replaced Anglo-Saxon whites that originally came from New England. And I'm just curious if kind of the interface, if your guest has any sense of how the interface between the populations changed when the Northern Plains became more ethnic white versus white. I mean, I know they were much more labor oriented politically.
Gotcha, Peter. Thanks for calling in. So did this change in population, New Englanders to German and Scandinavian immigrants, did that change life for the Black people here in Wisconsin?
It did not. I mean, and it's from the standpoint that, you know, America was a slaveholding republic, right? And when Wisconsin becomes a state in 1848, it enters the Union as a free state. But it is still a place where white privilege was real. And I don't mean that in any kind of abstract, in any kind of abstract manner. So we can go into the documents of the state, say our first constitution, right, which is ratified and put into place in 1848. And if you look at the suffrage article of that constitution, and I really encourage people to do this, you can find this at the Wisconsin Historical Society. You can look it up on your phone. You can download it as a PDF. If you go to the suffrage article, white privilege is real right there in print. It tells us who can vote. So what are the requirements for voting in Wisconsin in 1848? You must be white, you must be male, and you must be over 21. You didn't even need to be a citizen, right? If you were a foreign-born white man in 1848 and had lived in the area for at least a year and declared an intention to become a citizen, you could vote. Because whiteness and citizenship were so conflated in the nation, and they were conflated right here in Wisconsin, right? And there really is not a pushback from white immigrants. They accept this privilege and they move in that privilege. And Black men do not get access to the ballot box in Wisconsin until 1866, when Ezekiel Gillespie successfully sues for the right to vote as a Black man.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Peter now, calling from Summers. Peter, hi.
Hello there. I teach seventh grade. I was a history major, UW-Madison. And one of the things that has bothered me is the fact that the existence of sunset towns in this state in the Midwest, and I'm just going to go ahead and let your guests define what a sunset town is for us, but it is a virtually unknown piece of American history and Wisconsin history. And in order for us to reconcile the fact that racism is indeed bound up in every part of this country and has been from its inception, unless we cannot reconcile that until we recognize it. So I'm wondering what, if the author can explain.
Got it, Peter. Thanks a lot for the call. Sunset towns, what they are and what they were in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. So sunset towns are places where Black people are not supposed to be after dark. Right. So they are, their presence is tolerated during the day, especially as they work and labor for white families. But they were not supposed to be there after dark. And Wisconsin, like most states in the Union, like all states in the Union, had sunset towns, particularly in the Fox Valley. And if this is something you're interested in, James Lowen wrote a book called Sundown Towns several years ago. It's called Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. And it's hard to understand contemporary persistent disparities and anti-Blackness in the Midwest if you don't understand the long history of it. And that history is a history that is rooted in race-based slavery, which was central to the founding of the nation. And I think, as your last caller so pointedly pointed out, until we really understand that, trying to address the problems we have now are really difficult, right? If we think of them as recent or the Midwest having no history of racism to overcome, we really are not in a position to address the deep-seated history of racism in places like Wisconsin.
Thanks a lot for that call. And that brings us around back to the beginning in some ways of why we look at this. And I think, and I'll say growing up in the Midwest, I think I grew up learning that all the bad stuff happened down in the South. And, you know, it hadn't been a problem. This wasn't an issue in my home state of Michigan, say, in the early days of the state. How important it is to you to correct that record?
It's critically important to me. As you know, I'm sure you know, and many of your guests do, the Midwest ranks among the worst places for Black people to live in terms of health, wealth, graduation rates, you name it, it's among the worst. And understanding that it's a part of a long history of marginalization, I think is critical to us addressing it. And racism has been intentional in our institutions, in our governments, in our schools, and we can intentionally remove it. So history serves a real function, right? This isn't about making people feel bad. This is about understanding the truth of our past and learning how we can move from it, right? Because these are systems that are created and they are systems that can be deconstructed.
We'll leave it there for now. Christy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Christy Clark Pujara, Associate Professor of Afro-American Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's the author of the book Dark Work, The Business of Slavery in Rhode Island. She's currently writing From Slavery to Suffrage, Black on the Wisconsin Frontier, 1740 to 1866. She joined us for a look at the history of Black people here in Wisconsin, the often overlooked history, especially in the 18th and 19th centuries. We just got some stories there, but there's some good news. You can hear more from Christy Clark Pujara when she joins the morning show next week to talk about Black migration and voting and the history of the struggle for Black suffrage and equality in Wisconsin. You can hear that next Friday at 8 a.m. If you want to get out ahead of the game with a question right now, you can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Again, hear more from Christy next week, Friday on the morning show.